March 2019. 5. Your Honor, I get it. I mean, you're looking at a man who gets it. Tea Cake hadn't prepared anything, but for him, words came whether he wanted them to or not. So even though he knew he wasn't the best person to speak in his own defense at his sentencing hearing, he figured he was the most qualified to wing it. Okay, so the last time we met here in Your Honor's courtroom a few years ago, you made a great suggestion. Hey, you said, what if instead of me sending you to Ellsworth, you joined the military instead? That was a great idea. Thank you for that. And I totally took Your Honor up on that one. 2 years in the Navy, submarine corps, and let me tell you, that pressure testing is no picnic. Great experience for me, though. Honorable discharge. The judge looked down at the sentencing report on the bench in front of him. Says here, general discharge, honorable conditions. Right, yeah, exactly. So similar thing there. The public defender assigned to Tea Cake gave him a look that said, you are not helping. But Tea Cake pressed on. Point is, I got it then, and I get it now. Victim of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I mean, I know that's not going to cut it with you, but there are, like, super mitigating circumstances here. I get talked into stuff. That's my problem. But my personal feeling is I should never have to do time for this. Not for basically sitting in a car, basically. I mean, it's no way to treat a veteran, for starters, but you probably took one look at me and were like, you again. And I get that. I do.
Are you finished?
Yeah, I'm going to wrap up. Long story short, if you have a buddy who goes by Hazy Davy, and if he ever asks you to stay with the car while he runs in to do this one quick thing super quick, and you already know your name is sort of mud in Pottawatomie County, Kansas, you should for sure remember a previous commitment. That's all I'm saying. He started to sit down, then stood up again. Sorry, one more thing, real quick. I also been sick with the modern disease known as white privilege, for which I'm very sorry. Although that one's kind of not on me, I gotta say, I can't help, I'm white. Anyway, thank you.
Tea Cake sat down abruptly and didn't dare glance at his lawyer. He could read a room. The judge put on his glasses, picked up the sentencing report, and said 6 words. Thank you, Mr. Meacham, 19 months. By the time he got out of prison, Tea Cake's post-high school resume had exactly 2 things on it, a mediocre service record and his stint in Ellsworth Correctional. So the job at Atchison Storage was the best thing that could possibly happen to him, even at $8.35 an hour. Corporate didn't like a lot of employees to chase around, look after, so everybody did 12-hour shifts, 6 to 6, 4 days a week. Tea Cake was the new man and got nights, Thursday through Sunday. Truth is, he didn't much like the few friends he still had around here, and he wasn't looking to make any new ones unless maybe one of them was her, so saying he'd take the social graveyard shift was no big deal. It might have been the reason he got the job. That and the fact that he had all his teeth, which meant he was reasonably clean. Around here, a full, toothy smile was the only character reference you needed to sit at a reception desk and look after 650 locked underground storage units in the middle of the night. It was not, as they say, the science of rocketry. Tea Cake always tried to get to work early on Thursdays because he knew Griffin liked to get a jump on his weekend buzz and would beat ass out of there a few minutes before his shift was over. Griffin knew he could bail early because he could count on how badly Tea Cake needed the job and for nothing to go wrong. Sure enough, as Tea Cake came around the long curve at the base of the bluffs, he could see Griffin's sweaty, bald head glowing in the setting sun as the thick neck popped open at Pab's Blue Ribbon Tallboy, 2 or 3 of which were kept in his Harley Fat Boy's saddlebags for, well, they were kept in the saddlebags at all times. Griffin drained the beer, tossed aside the empty can, kicked the bike to life, and raised a middle finger to Tea Cake as he blew gravel out of there. The thing about Griffin, and everyone would agree on this, was that he was an asshole. Tea Cake flipped the bird back at him, a more or less friendly gesture at this point, and it was what passed for human contact in his day. As Tea Cake's Honda Civic passed the motorcycle, he breathed a sigh of relief that his boss had given him a miss, that he wouldn't have to have that same goddamn conversation with him again. But no such luck. He could see in the rear view Griffin was looping back, bringing the fat boy around the hood of the Civic. He pulled up next to the driver's door, idling as Tea Cake got out.
Well?
Griffin asked. So it would be that conversation again.
Told you, I can't help you.
Knew you're stupid. Didn't think you were that stupid.
Griffin spoke in staccato bursts, some words so fast they slammed together, others with odd pauses in between them, as if punctuation hadn't been invented yet.
I'm not stupid.
T-Cake said. Like, at all, okay? I would love to help you if I could, but it's fucked up for me vis-a-vis my, you know, personal situation. I'm just not going to do it.
Okay, so you'll think about it.
No, I wish I didn't even know about it.
The truth was, he knew only a part of it. The part about the 2 dozen 55-inch Samsung flat screens that Griffin was selling off one by one, but TK guessed that where there was hot stolen consumer goods smoke, there was hot stolen consumer goods fire, and it was the last thing he needed in his life. Griffin wasn't giving up.
I'm asking you to buzz the gate for a few friends of mine. Every once in a while, use your master key. What's the big fucking deal?
They don't have accounts with us. I can't let in anybody who doesn't have an account.
Who's gonna know?
I have heard these words before, T-Cake said. You do it.
I can't.
Griffin shrugged.
Why not?
Nobody's gonna fucking come in the daytime, and I don't work nights.
Case closed.
Just do it. So you and me don't have a problem.
Why do we gotta have a problem? T-Cake asked.
Because you know stuff, and you're not in, and if you're not in, and you know, then there's a problem. You know that.
There was no getting rid of him, and he was never going to drop it, so T-Cake did what he'd been doing for the past 6 weeks, which was to slow play it and hope it would go away. Was it a strategy that had shown even the slightest signs of working? No, but that was no reason to give up on it.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know about this thing or these things, T-Cake said, or what have you. I mean, just whatever, right? Okay?
There was no imaginable way a person could have made it any vaguer than that, not without a law degree and decades of experience testifying before Congress. T-Cake hoped it would do. He turned and walked toward the building. Griffin revved the bike and pulled his goggles down. He shouted something at T-Cake as he dropped the bike in gear. Just two words. But here's where Griffin's essential nature as an asshole came in again. He'd hooked up a non-compliant straight-pipe exhaust on his bike to make it extra loud and annoying to the rest of the world, so there was really no shot at all that his words would be understood over it. To T-Cake, it sounded like he yelled,
"Monday's bleeding!"
But in fact, what his boss had shouted was,
"Something's beeping!"
T-Cake would find that out for himself soon enough. The fact that Griffin was put in charge of anything was a joke, because not only was he dumb, racist, and violent, but he was a raging alcoholic to boot. Still, there are alcoholics and there are functioning alcoholics, and Griffin managed to be the latter by establishing a strict drinking regimen and sticking to it with the discipline of an Olympic athlete. He was dead sober for 3.5 days of the week, Monday through Wednesday, when he worked the first three of his 4 12-hour shifts, and he didn't start drinking until just before 6 p.m. on Thursday. That, however, was a drunk that he would build and maintain with fussy dedication, starting right now and continuing through his long weekend until he passed out on Sunday night. Really, the Monday hangover was the only hard part, but Griffin had been feeling them for so long now they just seemed like part of a normal Monday morning. Toast, coffee, bleeding from the eyeballs, must be a new work week. Griffin was born over in Council Bluffs and spent 6 years working in a McDonald's in Salina, where he'd risen to the rank of swing manager. It was a tight little job, not least because of the tight little high school trim that he had the power to hire and fire and get high with in the parking lot after work. Griffin was an unattractive man. That was just an objective reality. He was thick as a fireplug, and his entire body, with the notable exception of his head, was covered with patchy, multicolored clumps of hair that made his back look like the floor of a barber shop at the end of a long day. But the power to grant somebody the first actual paying job and to provide the occasional joint got him far in life, at least with 16-year-olds, and when he was still in his not-quite-mid-20s. Soon enough, the 16-year-olds would wise up and the last of his hair would go and his solid build would give way to what could only be called a fat gut. But for those few years in that one place, Griffin was a king, pulling down $24,400 a year, headed for a sure spot at Hamburger U, the McDonald's upper management training program, and nailing underage hotties at least every other week. Then those little fuckers, those little wise-ass shitheads who didn't really need the job, who just got the job because their parents wanted them to learn the value of work, those little douchebags from over in the flats, they ruined everything. They were working drive-through during a rush when it happened. Why Griffin had ever scheduled them in there together is beyond him to this day. He must have been nursing a wicked hangover to let those two clowns work within 50 feet of each other
but they started their smart-ass shit on the intercom. They'd take orders in made-up Spanish, pretend the speaker was cutting in and out, declare today lottery day and give away free meals, all that shit that's so hilarious because real people's jobs don't mean anything. Not when you're going to Kansas State in the fall with every single expense paid by mommy and daddy. And the only reason this job will ever turn up on your resume is to show what a hardworking man of the people you were in high school. There they are, your fast food work dues, fully paid, just like your $10,000 community service trip to Guatemala, where you slowed down the building of a school by taking 1,000 pictures of yourself to post on Instagram. On that particular day, there was a McDonald's observer from Regional in the parking lot, a guy taking times on the drive-thru and copious notes on the unfunny shenanigans going on in there. The good-looking creep, the smarmy one, not the half-decent red-headed kid who just went along with the bullshit, but the handsome fucker, the one who was sleeping with the window girl in the Docksiders, whom Griffin himself could never get to even look at him. That kid knew the guy was out there. And he sat on that nugget of information for a good half hour until he finally smirked past the office and said, "Oh, hey, there's a McDonald's secret agent man parked out by the dumpster." Griffin was demoted to grill the next day, and he quit before he ended up at the fry station. He had the job at Atchison Storage 3 weeks later, and when the current manager there moved to Leawood to get married, Griffin inherited the $14-an-hour job, which, if he never, ever took a week off, meant $34,000 a year and 3 free days a week to get wasted. He also figured he could pull in another $10,000 in cash for housing the Samsungs and other items of an inconvenient nature that showed up needing a temporary home from time to time. The previous manager had clued him in about the side gig, which Griffin understood was a common perk of the self-storage management community. Hang on to this stuff, let people pick it up, take a cut of whatever it sells for. Zero risk. All in all, it was a decent setup, but not half as good as what it could have been. He could have had a career in management, real management. Sitting at a desk all day so you can help a parade of freaks and hillbillies get access to their useless shit is a hell of a lot different from presiding over a constant parade of job-seeking teenage sluts. But you takes what you can takes. Atchison, Kansas was not a buffet of career opportunity. Despite everything that happened, Griffin's only regret in life so far was that he could never get anyone to agree to call him Griff, or G-Dog, or by his goddamn first name. All the man wanted was a nickname, but he was just Griffin. T-Cake punched in behind the front desk. He heard the beep, but he didn't hear the beep. It was one of those things. Whatever the part of your brain is that registers an extremely low volume, high-pitched tone that comes once every 90 seconds, it was keeping the news to itself for the first half hour he was at the desk. The faint beep would come, it would register somewhere in the back of his mind, but then it would be crowded out by other, more pressing matters. First, he had to check the monitors, of which there were a dozen, to make sure the place was clean and empty and as barren and depressing as always. Check. Then a quick glance over at the east entrance to see if she had shown up for work yet. She had, and to think for a second whether there was any plausible reason to orchestrate running into her. There wasn't. There was also the stink. Griffin was never a big one for tidying up, and the trash can was half full of Subway wrappers, including a former 12-inch tuner on wheat from the smell of it, and the reception area reeked of old lunch. Somebody would have to do something about that. 12 hours with tuna stench would be a long-ass shift. And finally, there was a customer, Mrs. Rooney, coming through the glass front doors all frazzled and testy and all of a sudden. "Hey, Mrs. Rooney, what up? You staying cool?" "I need to get into SB211. T-Cake was not so easily deterred. "It's hot out, right? Like Africa hot. Weird for March, but I guess we gotta stop saying that, huh? I need to get in there right quick." In unit SB211, Mary Rooney had 27 banker's boxes filled with her children's and grandchildren's school reports, birthday cards, Mother's Day cards, Father's Day cards, Christmas cards, and all their random notes expressing overwhelming love and or blinding rage, depending on their proximity to adolescence at the time of writing. She also had 42 ceramic coffee mugs and pencil jars made at Pottery for Fun between 1995 and 2008, when her arthritis got bad and she couldn't go anymore. That was in addition to 7 nylon duffel bags stuffed with newspapers from major events in world history, such as coverage of the opening ceremonies of the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles, In a vinyl Baywatch pencil case that was stuffed with $6,500 in cash, she was saving for the day the banks crashed for real. There were also four sealed moving boxes, contents long forgotten, so much old clothing that it was best measured by weight, 311 pounds, and an electric metal coffee pot from 1979 that sat on top of the mountain of other crap like a crown. At this moment, Mrs. Rooney had two shoeboxes under her arm and that look on her face, so TK buzzed the gate that led to the storage units with no further attempt at pleasantries. Let the record show, though, that the heat that day was most certainly worthy of comment. It had been 86 degrees in the center of town at one point. But whatever, Mary Rooney needed to get into her unit right quick, and between her stuff and Mary Rooney, you had best not get. Teacake watched her on the monitors, first as she passed through the gate, then into the upper west hallway, her gray perm floating down the endless corridor lined with cream-colored garage doors, all the way to the far end, where she pushed the elevator button and waited, looking back over her shoulder twice. "Yeah, like somebody's gonna follow you and steal your shoeboxes filled with old socks, Mary." And he kept watching as she got into the elevator, rode down two levels to the sub-basement, stepped off, walked halfway down the subterranean hallway in that weird, shuffling, sideways like a coyote stride of hers, and slung open the door on unit SB211. She stepped inside, clicked on a light, and slammed the door shut behind her. She would be in there for hours. When you find yourself staring, glassy-eyed, at a bank of video monitors, watching as a moderately old lady makes her slow and deliberate way through a drab, all-white underground storage facility so she can get to her completely uninteresting personal pile of shit, when you do this with no hope whatsoever that this lady will do anything even remotely interesting, that is the moment you'll know you've bottomed out, entertainment-wise. Teacake was there. And then everything changed. His eyes had fallen on the upper right-hand screen in the corner of the bank of monitors, the one that covered the other guard desk on the eastern side of the facility. Naomi was on the move. The cave complex was enormous and cut right through the heart of the bluffs, so to save the trucks from Kansas City having to drive all the way around Highway 83 to Highway 18 to Highway E, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had cut in two entrances, one each on the eastern and western sides of the massive chunk of rock. As a result, Atchison had two reception areas and two people working the place at any given time, although they had different sections to monitor, so running into your coworker almost never happened. Unless you made it happen, which Teacake had been trying to do for 2 weeks now, since the day Naomi started. Her schedule was erratic. He could never put his finger on when she was going to be working and when she wasn't, so he'd tried to just keep an eye on the monitors and engineer a run-in, but it hadn't happened yet. There had been a few times she was doing rounds when he almost took a shot at it, but when she was on the move, he never knew where she was headed, so he hadn't come up with a scenario that would have given him quite the right degree of natural. The place was so big that the only way to make it work would be to check her location and then go into a full-on sprint to get near her while she was still even remotely in the area. It would have been more hunting her down than running into her. There's something about showing up breathless and sweaty for a coincidental bump-in with an attractive woman that is bound to come off as scary. Now, however, opportunity was pounding on his door with both fists, because Naomi was walking down the long eastern main hallway with a full trash can under her arm, and that could mean only one destination, the loading dock, where the dumpsters were. Teacake grabbed the brimming trash can from next to the reception desk. "Thank you, Griffin, you pig. You bet I'll clean up your disgusting lunch." And he took off for the loading dock.